Welcome, everyone, to our 2025 second quarter Beacon Church Collaborative Zoom meeting. Our topic today is Becoming a Trauma-Informed Church, and it'll be presented by our speaker, Jessica Thompson. A couple of things I wanted to do before we get started. One is to inform you that this meeting will be both video and audio taped, just so you know. The audio tape always is put on our website afterwards, and the video tape is one that Jessica wanted to make sure we had as well. Also, because you're new to us, anyone that I don't know and hasn't been to a meeting before, if you would just in the chat give me your name and the church you attend, it just gives me an idea of the different churches that we are making connections with, people, those parishioners in that church. I love to know that. And with that, I'm going to start now the introduction. So it's my pleasure to introduce Jessica Thompson. She has been a blogger for Bridge since February 2024 and is also a member of our Spiritual Connections Vision Team. So I'm looking forward now, Jessica, to your presentation. And with that, I am handing it over to you.
All righty. Thank you, Jackie. Like Jackie said, that I've been involved with Bridge Ministries for probably 3 years now, actually, and began blogging 2 years ago or last year, and working with becoming further involved in the disability community, specifically in disability and churches. And I am currently going to school, and one of the things that I felt would be important to present on is becoming a trauma-informed church. So this will affect many different ways we it works with interacting with people with disabilities, but really many people who come into the church because churches don't always feel safe for everybody. So first, let's just make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. Take care of your body, mind, and soul. Discussing trauma can bring up past traumas from within ourselves and past experience. Please be mindful, and if this workshop takes you into a space that is troubling for you, please do what you need to do to take care of yourself. Let us pray. God of refuge and strength, be with us as we do this work, as we learn, create, and examine how we as a community of faith can ensure that this is a home for all people of all experiences. Help us live out your love. Center us in the hope that you offer to us no matter what life brings. Be with us as we do this hard work, as it may dot cause discomfort within ourselves and the larger faith community. Remind us that loving our neighbor and creating a community that is based on wholeness is worth every effort. In your love, amen.
Amen.
So here's a quote from Trauma-Informed Pastoral Care by Karen A. McClintock. It's a good book. Our pews are full of people who have experienced trauma. Every person we encounter is a child of God. All individuals are both resilient and vulnerable and need your compassion. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story. I grew up in the church and also in a pretty abusive environment. The church was where I was safe. The church was where I was cared for. And I also thought that if I did everything right, God would save me. And so I kept trying to be the right person that I was supposed to be, trying to love, trying to serve God, and hurts kept happening. When I was 19 years old, I got really sick. I couldn't see. I started having seizures. I was struggling to walk. Ultimately, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. The church community that I was in saw it as demon possession. They tried to get the demons out of me by hitting me with a Bible and saying, "What is your name?" That was when all I wanted to do was love and serve God. That was incredibly traumatizing, and it's not an unknown story in the disability community. Most people, if not all people that I know who are visibly disabled, have had experiences of people trying to heal them with faith healing in a way that I don't particularly think aligns with how God wants us to treat individuals. Because of that, I think that knowing what many people, especially in the disability community, but in other communities as well, LGBTQ, people of color, indigenous communities, many people who are marginalized, the church feels like the most unsafe place to be. And we cannot say, oh, this is going to be a safe place and guarantee it because we don't know what going to trigger everybody. But being trauma-informed, coming in, creating a place where that is a known under there's a known understanding of trauma and how much it is involved in our lives, in the world, and really interacts with every bit of who we are as individuals and as community makes it a more secure place. So, what is trauma? Trauma can be defined as any experience of repeated experience where this per or repeated experience where a person feels terrified, powerless, and overwhelmed to the extent that it challenges their capacity to cope. It can leave an imprint on the person's nervous system, emotions, bodies, behaviors, learning, and relationships. If this happens as a child, these are called ACEs. They're life events that actually will interact and affect the individual's development. If it's as a community, it can affect the community. But what it does is it's not just part of the brain. It actually becomes in our body and our nervous system. And a traumatic experience causes a physiological reaction that one can't just get over. Trauma is both individual and communal. So, the individual traumas that each individual faces, abuse, accident, loss, or many other destabilizing events in one's individual life, a traumatic experience, something that's traumatic for one person may not be traumatic for another. It's a process. And it just depends on each individual's ability to cope with that specific experience. There are vulnerability factors involved too. So, somebody who's marginalized, somebody who doesn't have the community support, if there's layer upon layer of trauma, disabled people have a much higher, amount of traumatic experiences, so and a less amount of ability to be resilient to it because we're not as it's not as easy for us to escape from things. There's a lot more vulnerability that makes a difference, but anyone can experience trauma. Community trauma is collective trauma that is shared and experienced by people often due to social inequities, lack of resources, or adequate access to them, and the disconnection from political and social efficacy. So we have, and in the image I have here, there are the direct victims, and that's that destabilizing event creates a traumatic, memory in them in bodily experience. Then there's those that are directly impacted around it. So if a family member has a traumatic accident or something, then those around it are going to be affected. Helpers are affected. Secondary trauma is a big deal. So those of us who are helping others need to be very aware that we are attending to our own trauma responses and not getting caught up in it, and doing the self-care and seeking help that we need to so that we can be effective helpers. There's the communities that are directly impacted, as well as broader humanity. So trauma touches and reaches all people and communities. Now, how to become a trauma-informed church? So it is a way of doing life together. If we acknowledge that anyone that comes into our pews, comes into our churches, comes into our events and into our lives could possibly be being affected by a traumatic experience in their bodies. Things could be triggered in their memories. They could be fragile and vulnerable. It's a way of treating each and every person with the care and compassion that one would have to anyone who is traumatized. And that's using universal trauma precautions is that whole concept that every time I encounter another, I'm encountering another with the understanding that I don't know their full history and what they're walking into today, and viewing them with compassion and empathy and kindness, and working to have a secure environment for them to be able to thrive. We also move from the question of what's wrong with you to what happened to you. It's a way of having compassion when we see others who are responding in a way that's peculiar to think, what happened to you? It's not you that are wrong. You are innate, wonderful, beautiful child of God, intrinsically full and whole of God's love and goodness. But this world, things happen to us. And last and most important, the goal is to not re-traumatize. That's the main reason why we try to become a trauma-informed church. So that we aren't re-traumatizing people as they walk in the door. Now, I left the church after this healing time of that they were trying to get the demons out of me. I left for 10 years. And for those 10 years, God was still with me, but I did not feel safe walking into a church building. Still, I needed community. And at one point in time, I became so desperate that I called up the local Episcopal church and I said, I don't know if I can walk into a church building, but I need community. And from that, there became a dialogue with a priest working with me to get some understanding of how the church works, how to make it a safe or secure place for me to be able to live into the full flourishing that God desires me to live into, which is in community. There's six key principles of the trauma-informed approach. safety or security. Like I said, this is from the Mental Health Services Association. It's become the standard for trauma-informed care. Safety or security. This includes physical, emotional, and relational safety. Do people who have experienced feel included within your worshiping community? What structures are in place to protect a person's boundaries? Consider the power dynamics of your faith community and how it might feel vulnerable to your community. Feel vulnerable in your community or feel vulnerable. Everything from pastoral visits to divorce care counseling to child care to being in need of money, food, or resources. That goes all into how to make things seem safe or secure. I remember one thing when my priest started talking with me, she always removed her collar when she started talking with me. Now I realize and asked her later on why she did that. And it was really decreasing that power dynamic, knowing that I had been harmed from people that were in authority above me. Trustworthiness and transparency. Is authenticity and vulnerability valued within your community of faith? Are confidences kept? Does unintentional sharing of information happen, even with good intentions, such as prayer chain, prayer requests, asking people what if it's okay to share something, even if they've said that it's okay, checking in and letting them know beforehand, finding being really transparent about safe church procedures. We have the rule that there has to be two safeguarded people in with a person under the age of 18, really sticking with that, making sure that people know that that we are doing the best we can to make this a trustworthy and transparent place. Mutual support. Does a church go beyond being friendly to being a place where someone can make friendships? Does your place worship cultivate genuine shared vulnerability? Where can a person seek help without dealing with repercussions of power systems? This can happen both in large groups and small settings. And are ministry leaders modeling self-care through their own personal practices? That all makes a mutually supportive place. And as somebody as with a disability, how am I included in this? Am I seen as somebody who should be involved in all aspects of community? Empowerment, voice, and choice. Are those who minister to also given op the opportunity to share and teach? This is a critical one for people with disabilities. I was once serving chalice for a service for that we were installing a new priest. And I was the chalice bearer. I had a cup. I had my guide dog. People were helping me up and down the stairs. And a priest came up to our new rector afterwards and said, "Wow, I was shocked you had her up there. I was even more shocked that everybody just seemed to think it was no big deal. I have people with disabilities in my community, but I had always thought of them as only people that we minister to. Never thought of asking them to be involved in ministry." It's critical. It's critical for people to feel like they are truly involved, not just people who receive care, but who are able to give care. And Bridge has such a is such a great support for working with communities to come up with ways so that that can happen. Cultural, historical, and self-identity. Being aware of the unique cultural issues often bound up with trauma. I work a lot with the Indigenous community. I have heard time and time again about the boarding schools and the hurt that the church has done and the colonization. And I was asked to preach at this prayer walk that was going to be held between one church and then a house of prayer for in the Indigenous community, Daybreak Star. And I was nervous to do it. And I called the church out on its complicity in colonialization and the harm that it has done to the Indigenous community. We also have land acknowledgments. That's another thing that can work to address those societal ills and long-term intergenerational traumas. They're small steps for the harm that's been done, but being aware of them, in the disability community, being aware that the fight against being included in the ADA has caused so much pain in our community. The harm that has been done by so much poor theology, which I'll get into later, but being aware of those cultural, historical, and self-identity aspects of that makes trauma just a little bit bigger. So, practical considerations: safe church policies and trainings, windows on doors. Now, this is an interesting one. This is in my church. And we got a new priest, and he wanted to move to another room that had been being used for storage. So, they put a window on the door. And I walked in to meet with him right at the start of his, like the first week that he was there. And the window on the door is the one up top in that photo. And he said, I immediately looked at that as somebody who is trauma aware. I was like, ouch, you have to be 6 feet tall in order to see in that. The whole point is for anybody just walking by to be able to look in. It's just a safety that just makes things feel a bit better. So he had already noticed that and pointed it out to me and said, I'm already asked them to put another window in. And that made me, getting to know this new rector, feel a whole lot better and feel like, okay, this is somebody who gets it. But those things make it feel like people may get it a bit more. Keeping mobility devices with the individual. A lot of the reason why people feel like they can't escape is because they're trapped in, and things are a whole lot safer if you can just get up and leave. But when mobility devices are taken away for a service, it makes it so that things are not safe. If there's a disaster that happens, people who need those mobility devices are always terrified that they're going to be abandoned. It's an ongoing, and it creates a biological trauma response that will just go around in people's heads. Warning before loud and unexpected noises. My sister went to is a veteran, and she ha who has PTSD. She went to a new church, and they let a cannon off. She was not expecting that. It was a problem for her. She says, please, if you're going to let a cannon off, if bells are going to be rung that are not usually rung, screaming's going to happen, anything, any of those things can really set off somebody who has a trauma response. Predictability is key. Knowing exactly what's going to happen is really useful, because then you can prepare, know how to get to the exits, different things like that. Acknowledging the trauma. Acknowledge that we are all coming into this building a little raw from the world, of different levels, different abilities, but acknowledging that we're not all coming in pristine and that we aren't expected to act that way, like everything is always happy clappy. Most people that are now coming back to church are coming into the pews because things are really, really hard in their life. And people come to church because of desperation. So acknowledging that new people showing up and old people that are coming in after a time, acknowledging that there are some tendernesses going on, and it is our job to be there and be supportive and caring and compassionate. Which the last one is lean into compassion. If you don't know what else to do, just act out of compassion. Act out of kindness. Believe that an individual is really, truly doing the best they can with what they have at that moment. All right, toxic theology. Toxic theology is a culture that can manifest in conversations, sermons, and norms of faith community that include the just pray harder philosophy. While prayer is crucial, it should be part of a multifaceted approach that includes therapy and health support. Toxic theology includes the pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality that contributes to the stigma of mental health concerns, placing an undue burden and harm on individuals who need support, not more distance or critique. There are also unhelpful, toxic platitudes that, even well-intentioned, are harmful, such as, that was God's plan, or it all happens for the reason, which can ultimately hurt a person's faith and trust in God. Some of the harm at trauma-informed preaching and teaching is essential. Another thing that I didn't put here, but looking at the hymns as well, does the word your words do your words talk to everyone in the pew, specifically the marginalized? Read over your sermons or your teaching and see how it would relate to each individual in the pews. Because talking about hard things like racial inequality is so critically important. But is there a word of hope for those that are actually experiencing that? Or is it just targeted for those that might be perpetuating it? Pay careful attention to healing stories. Are we using them as metaphors for sin? So the other day, this past Sunday, if any of you come from a lectionary based tradition, it was the healing of the demonic man in Gets and that Jesus healed him and then threw the demons into the pigs. I knew it was coming. I also knew I was going to be going to a new church that I didn't trust. And part of my own exorcism was this whole, what is your name? Which comes from that story. I have been through lots of therapy, and I still was aware that I had no idea what this preacher was going to say from that pulpit. Ultimately, she did a great job, and it was fine, and I've done enough of my own work that I knew that I would be able to handle it. But my anxiety level still was up. My awareness was up because healing stories have been done in such ways that harm people who have medical conditions. Either that one can definitely be for people who have mental health or epilepsy. Others, healing of the blind man, things like that, where suddenly that is a symbol of sin. And the whole point of these healing stories is Jesus bringing people in community, breaking the bonds that kept them out to bring them in. And yet, when sermons like that are done, they're not written with the understanding that there's people who could be experiencing these sitting in my pew. Instead, individuals become object lessons, and that can be incredibly harmful. Preachers can't apologize for past church harm. The day that I preached at the prayer walk, I apologized for past harms done by the global church. And people responded with a big gasp. They were shocked that I did it, and it increased their ability to trust a little bit more, to be willing to reach out a little bit more, and has continued to grow our relationships. That's apologies can lead to healing. Focus on the whole person. Person first language. An individual with epilepsy instead of epileptic. Person with blindness instead of blind. Now, some people do prefer to have identity first language because that is how God made us. So being aware of that as well, but regardless, focusing on the whole person. People, it's not a wheelchair, it's a person who uses a wheelchair. And witness, walking, and resurrection. So the three steps of preaching and teaching through trauma is witnessing, so telling the story of trauma. Walking alongside, and the resurrection, the hope and healing that comes through Christ. This book on the side, A Healing Homiletic, Preaching and Disability by Kathy Black, has been incredibly useful to me as I have broken down. It goes through the lectionary and focuses specifically on some of the trickier healing stories that people do tend to cause harm in. So it's a really nice one to have if you preach or teach in your back pocket in order to pull out and see what are the ways that it can be preached, where are those, how can that cause harm, what are other opportunities? Come on. Healing prayers. Ask what the person wants prayer for. Now, like I said, healing prayers are something that I struggle with. I also do healing prayers and will pray for people and know that that can be an incredibly Fulfilling ministry and liberating for the individual who is receiving, if they ask. I have had people come up to me in the middle of the grocery store and say, "Can I pray for you to be able to lay hands on you and pray so you can see?" And I have said, "You know what? I think God and me, we think I'm okay just as I am." One tip is to just ask what the person wants prayer for. I once had somebody say, tell me in the words that you would like. What are the words that you would like to have prayed for you?" And that was very useful. When I came to my church, St. Andrew's, I'm always jumpy when going into new churches. It was the second time that I was there. I came in with a big gash on my leg. I also had my cane. I'm visually impaired. It's obvious that I'm disabled. But the big gash on my leg and all bandaged up. And a woman from my church or my new church came up to me and asked about that. And I said, "Oh, yeah. I had to go to the urgent care this morning. Because my neighbor's dog bit me." And she asked how it was, and I'm like, "Oh, well, it seems like it's gonna be okay. The big concern is I still need to have the discussion with my neighbor." And afterwards, she came up to me and said that she had gone through a discernment and discovered one of her gifts is healing prayers. And she was wondering if I would be okay if she prayed for me and the healing of my l leg and the relationship with my neighbor. And that for me was lovely because, obviously I have other things going on, but that's not what she went to. She didn't see that as the urgent need. That's just how I live. And I felt seen and cared for and loved. And that's probably the reason that I stayed at that church. And the last page here is I have some books and some other resources, getting more information on trauma. Becoming a trauma-informed church. I use the Sacred Series Toolkit. They also have webinars. Taking classes in mental health first aid can be incredibly useful. Connections Matter training is another good training that I've done, as well as the Othering and Belonging Institute. ACEs are one way to look at trauma-informed care, and that looks at those childhood adverse events that have happened during young people's lives and how it affects their way, the way that they live in, and really affects their health in the future. So, learning about those, some books. I put a John Swinton book, Finding Jesus in the Storm, which talks about his chaplaincy, specifically about mental health challenges and how to not do harm. My Body is Not a Prayer Request is going to be the first and one that I'll always recommend to people. How Ableism Fuels Racism really looks at both the individual and also the communal traumas and collective traumas and harm that our society as it is created does. Trauma-Informed Pastoral Care is a good book. I used that this past term and it's been very useful. Bible Through the Lens of Traumas, another one that breaks different stories and different places in the Bible that can be then used to preach or teach through the lens of trauma. And that is all of the material that I have. I would love to open it up for discussion.
I
Go ahead, Paul. Paul, go ahead.
I can very briefly share one of my experiences. It happened 60 years ago, but somehow it continued in the sense that for the first time, when I was about 20, and for the first time I was allowed to go out of the house without one of my siblings or my parents. Because of the conditions there and my instability, I completely understand why they did not allow me to go alone outside. But then once I started going, they encouraged me, and it was such a joy. And not only joy, but some kind of a thing that elevated my spirit. Here I was stuck at home for 20 years. Now I'm going out. So I'm watching people, and some small farm was there. And then one person came with a Bible in his hand. His first question was, "Aren't you sad?" So I said, "No." So he asked me again, "Aren't you sad?" I said, "No." "Are you sure you're not sad?" I said, "I'm sure I'm not sure. I'm not sad. Aren't you sad because you're disabled?" That, I didn't have the exposure I had today. I haven't even started volunteering or anything like that. I'm just first time getting out of the house. So he kind of tried to push to make me accept that I was sad because of my disability. I kept saying no. Then he asked me if he could pray for me. And I said no. Don't ask me whether it's the right thing to do or not, but I said no. And he had a shock expression on his face, and then he walked away. Now, 60 years later, I'm narrating this to a small group of people. And one of the comments I got was, "I shouldn't have replied to him that way." So that kind of a trauma lingered. And I was not sharing this to get some comfort or anything like that. I'm sharing my story. So that kind of a thing lingered for 60 years and came back to me.
Yeah, I always think about trauma as it's always in our inbox. So it's always on the table and it gets picked up and then it's too much to deal with, so put back down. Picked up, put back down. And so then it can get filed away, and then sometimes with work and therapy and processing can get filed away, and then sometimes it just magically pops back right on the inbox, right on my desk. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I need to look at that again and file it away again, but it's there. And when our experiences or our experiences and how we perceived them at the time, responded to them at the time, reacted, that's completely valid. I mean, to me, it sounds like God was giving you the strength to know that you were okay, just as you were. You were actually feeling great that you were able to be outside. And so having that and knowing that you are complete within yourself, but that harm is done. And it's just so easy for people to very quickly judge that if we're not coming in and realizing that people have those, especially when we're sharing vulnerable things, those are can be traumatic things. And They could be processed traumatic things, but still, it's part of a story. It's part of our way of living and what we carry.
So, Paul, do you think that when they said you shouldn't have answered him, no, I don't want prayer, was the assumption on their part, well, you're disabled. Of course you want prayer. Was that kind of what they were, is that the feeling you got from their responses? Well, every disabled person needs prayer.
No, I think they thought I was kind of a rude to that guy. See, in his heart, he was trying to do his best with what he knew. And what he knew is, I do not know where he got it from, but he had a Bible in his hand. So telling him no to a person who's carrying a Bible, maybe that was wrong on my part. I don't know what this person was telling. I didn't develop that conversation further. I didn't ask her, why do you say I shouldn't have answered it that way?
Go ahead, Jan.
It reminds me somewhat of the discussions with people of color who say, you know, I just get tired of having to explain and educate people. Just take me as I am and without a bunch of assumptions. And it is, it's exhausting. It's like, oh, here we go again. You know? So, it's just a mindset.
Somebody approached me the other day, and they want me to talk to a young man who's having. He's disabled. He used some kind of a little moped, wearing braces and all that, goes to work, struggles a lot. The way that woman kind of explained to me was, once in a while, he's not what the rest of the world would expect him to be. So she said, so I sit with him with my Bible and teach and try to explain his situation from the Bible. And I told her, it's my niece, so I had the right to tell her that. And she's 40 something. So I told her, don't take the Bible, take Jesus.
Oh, what a great answer.
So she looked at me, no, I'm not, I won't do this, that. But the thing is, I just smiled and kept quiet. With all good intentions, people do, that may not be the right thing for that particular person with that particular disability. So
So
it is difficult on both sides, the
just
person who's
not,
trying to help
oh, so, I'm
as
sorry,
well as
Paul.
working on
Excuse
himself.
me. I apologize for interrupting you. I didn't mean to do that. Jessica, I wanted a clarification on one thing. I made a note about it because I want to make sure I understood. But then you pull a point where you talked about instead of thinking what's wrong with you, instead what has happened to you. Is this more of an attitudinal thing where you're not looking at them in a judgmental, like, gosh, what is wrong with you behaving like you do, as opposed to what could have happened to you? And I only say that from what Jan just said, that, you know, you wonder how much of a person's history they want to share because that's very personal to them and very private to them. And that's a trustworthy thing. So could you expound just a little bit more on that?
Yes, and I think that that is accurate. So instead of seeing a person, you know, as the wrong, yes, exactly, the ooh, what's wrong with you, and being judgmental, that's something that doesn't mean that it's the right time and place to then dig in and what's happened to you either. That's also not, that wouldn't be trauma informed, because people's stories get to be their stories and they can share when they so choose. But realizing that there is a whole context that creates a person, and it's not just a They just need to act different. Or, my mind that I always use is people are doing the best they can with what they have in this time. And that's the one I tend to use, the what happened versus what's wrong versus what's happened was one that was presented to me when I was doing some trauma-informed classes. But I think that both of them, and it's the you're doing the best you can. And every single person, no matter how difficult, no matter if they're responding in a way that makes zero sense to you, and that includes the people that are being rather not compassionate. They also are doing the best they can with what they have at this time. And that's why talking about trauma-informed churches and how to be better allies, how to be better, more aware, how to change our way of being so that we can be more inclusive and accepting of other people is so important because it is a community's response that we're working with.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So, question of how I just imagine I'm more likely to run into a scenario with kids in church, and maybe they become disruptive. And do you say anything, not because of the disruption, let's say the parents take them out or bring them back in or whatever, but do you say anything? What do you say to the parents? Can I pray for you? I mean, or that's making the assumption something's wrong. How do you start that?
I would start with, is there anything I can do to support you? And if that it seems like something that prayer may, or if you feel, I also listen to spirit. So spirit's nudging, prayer may be the way to go. Then ask, is it, would you like me to pray for you? Don't force it. And no is okay, always an okay answer. So making sure that they know, or is there anything that I could pray for? And that may end up what people say when you ask them, is there anything that I could pray for? May be completely different than you would have ever thought. That may be a disruptive kid. That may be the normal thing. And actually, what's going on today may actually be a really good day for that kiddo and for that family. But they may be struggling with their car running. We don't know. So asking, is there anything that I could pray for you? Also making life experiences neutral. So if there is a disrupt, if the kids act in a way that might be odd to, not typical, still, that just happens to be, it's not good, it's not bad, it just is. And then days that the kid's acting, has what we would consider a more socially appropriate behavior, that still is not good, not bad, that's just what it is. So it's accepting and loving who is in front of us. But prayer is definitely in the confines of a church. Is something that I think it's typically okay to ask if somebody would like prayer, but telling people what they want prayer for is, and also if it's outside of the confines of a church, you don't know the person, things like that. But relationship building is really a good way, and asking what supports you could have. Does that may help?
I think a lot of times I'm likely to just be silent and not say anything, and I think it's at least now I have an option.
And a families with small kids tend to have support needs, any of them. So knowing that there's another person who cares and is invested in their family is, especially within a church community, is bonus.
And Doug, if it's a family that has a child with autism or other behavioral issues, right, that a child really can't control, and their parents are working with them because they're young, they're children, right? They're not going to have that maturity level. Is that one of the worst things that, then this would be similar to the trauma that Jessica had, is families are traumatized by churches who say, you can't bring your kid because he's very disruptive and we don't like it. You don't come here. That's very, very traumatizing. And so in my church, we had a family where that was an issue, and their child cannot sit. So she's got to be moving all the time, moving. And she moves her little walker. She's delightful. But I really was proactive in giving her permission. If your child would like to move around the back of the church, we're totally fine with that. That is okay. She had emailed me after that, when she just allowed her child to kind of move around the back of the church, that she was so thankful that she felt like now it was okay. It was okay. And she didn't feel like she had permission before that. And I wanted her to feel like you don't really need permission, but I'm going to tell you it's okay. So I think that it's more of, I think what Jessica's saying is not doing the negative traumatic thing, which is rejecting that family and criticizing that family, but embracing the challenges they have with that child. And how can we support that family with that child so that they feel very welcome? And as Jessica had said, that they're in a safe place. I brought my child to a safe place.
I know somebody who, when he was a child, infant, autistic kiddo, looked and acted weird, but didn't really do much at that point in time. He was uninvited to church because he was freaking people out. Family ended up finding another church that, and then he progressed to a stage where anytime the pew, the bulletin or the hymnal got turned a little bit too quickly or too slowly, it was a major freak out. Mom got up, left until he was calmed down, came back in. It was just an ongoing thing. Not one time was she out in the hallway soothing that child by herself. And on days when it was too overwhelming for her to take that child to church and would just send dad and the other kids, there would be a phone call. Where is your kid? We miss him. And we need him. He is important for our community. That made all the difference.
It does. Well, guys, we are at the end of our hour. Jessica, thank you very much. Very, very much. Just very
Thank you.
informational, very helpful. And thank you for sharing so transparently about your own personal experiences. That kind of transparency and honesty speaks to me louder than anything else can, because we know it's real for you, very real. That's for sure. Everyone, thank you for coming. I so appreciate you being a part of this meeting. Again, it will be available audio on our website. So give me just about a week to get that done. Jessica, if you will provide a PDF version of the PowerPoint, I always like to send that out also by email, and that way they'll see all of your notes and your book references and things like that. So you and I will talk about that as well. But in the meantime, I'll conclude it at this point. So everyone, have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.